and welcome to today's Raging Bull podcast. We occasionally like to add guest interviews from traders and experts from Raging Bull's Elite Traders Chat Room. In the Raging Bull Elite Chat Room, we hold live trading sessions with Raging Bull's traders, elite members, and our invited guests. These sessions are hosted by our Elite Chat Room host, Hitha Herzog. It's my pleasure now to introduce Hitha and one of our special guests to the Raging Bull podcast.
Hey there, Elite Room. It's Hitha Herzog, your host of the Elite Chat Room here. And I, as promised, have Dr. Henry G, who's the co-founder of Sorrento Therapeutics and president and chairman as well. And we also have Dr. Mark Brunswick. He is the senior vice president of regulatory affairs at Sorrento. Thank you both for being here in the room with us.
I'm good.
So, Dr. G, you had quite an announcement on Friday. I mean, you were in here with us a couple of weeks ago, but you had an announcement on Friday. It looks like a couple of weeks ago, you were discussing the antibody STI 1499. Now you just have this announcement about the COVID trap.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that. What does that mean? And why is this significant right now?
Yeah, so COVID trap is a decoy protein utilizing the human receptor for viral entry. So this type of approach has been done for big disease. Amgen has a drug called Enbrel, which is a receptor for TNF-alpha, which causing rheumatoid arthritis, so the IA. So we're using the same approach here. So basically, we're using a human receptor, make it a decoy protein floating around, and when they meet with the virus, they wrap around the virus. So they are basically fooling the virus, think it's a target, but it's not a target on the healthy cell. So this way, virus being fooled, they cannot get into the healthy cell to do infection and replication inside the cells.
So this is basically, if I'm understanding correctly, it's almost like a blanket shield around the virus so that it can't replicate within the body, correct?
Exactly. So basically you wrap around the virus without them getting closer to the healthy cells.
Once this is introduced to the body, does the body then make its own antibodies to fight off the virus? Or do you have to continue to introduce antibodies? Would you have to continuously introduce that into the body?
Yes. So what you do is before the virus infection or right after the virus infection, you introduce the decoy protein, fool the virus to attack it, which is, binds to the decoy protein. Then the decoy protein wrap around it and not getting the virus into the cell. So the eventually virus dies off because they have to get into healthy cell to replicate.
Right.
If you don't have a virus over there, you can detect it by diagnostics. If there is no virus, you don't need to inject again. But if you want to protect the orphan, you may want to do periodically inject the decoy protein, which is COVID trap here.
Okay, so the body then doesn't start replicating the antibody then. We have to continuously put this into the body to make sure that, I'll use myself as an example. I currently don't have COVID. I tested negative for that. But if I were to test positive for it and I was shedding the virus, I would then take COVID trap, correct? And it would create this invisible yet effective shield around that virus protein that would then protect my body. But then I would have to eventually take another shot of it or another dose of it, I guess I should say. How far along is that timeline? Would it be within weeks or would it be within months?
So depends on what the dose you put it in. This can be a couple of months, could be even longer. Potentially, it depends on what dose you put it in, what form you put it in, could be longer lasting to 6 to 12 months. So that means you can cover the whole season potentially. So there's one form, for example, you can have a longer half-life of this molecule. That means they can stay in the body longer than, being kicked it out by the body. So that can goes to, 2 to 3 months, but you add enough doses, they may get to 6 to 12 months. And the other way to do that is that you're putting a genetic encoding material into your body. So your body in the muscle produce this protein continuously. So that can last potentially sometimes over a year or longer. Some of the technologies there, you can last for 5 years potentially.
Got it. So it's this regeneration of the protein versus the body making an antibody, which is real. It's a differentiation between other type of antibody antidotes for COVID-19. Dr. G, could you describe then, so what is the specific difference between STI 1499 and this COVID trap? And should someone use it in tandem with each other?
Yeah, so there is an analogy in the pharmaceutical space. There's one drug is called Humira from AbbVie, which is the largest selling drug for the same indication, arthritis. And this is by AbbVie called Humira. It's about a $20 billion a year sales. And the Amgen has Enbrel, which is the same target by using a decoy protein. So one is the antibody was Humira, the other one is decoy protein. The 1499 is an antibody with neutralizing antibody. That means they wrap around the virus and get rid of it, you know, that way. And the same as a trapper. Now, the difference of this is the protein trapper, the receptor is used by the virus to enter into the cell. So that is very broad spectrum. When you have the virus mutated, they cannot mutate it to a point that they now using the receptor to enter into the cell. Then they cannot survive. So that means COVID trapper potentially could be a pan-coronavirus, whichever virus mutates, but they still using the same receptor getting into the cell. This one go avoiding any mutation-induced resistance. The 1499, which is an antibody, very tightly binds to the virus. That do the job specifically for this virus is very effectively in vitro. So I think this potentially there is a synergy here and potentially there is a redundancy. So if one somehow does not work, the other one kicks in. So they you have a redundancy.
There's certainly a conversation too in this nation and globally about the apprehension of getting a shot, a vaccination for a potential immunity to COVID. I think the general gist of these type of the school of thought is that they don't want to, you know, people that are very anti having a vaccination, they're anti introducing a virus into their body. Could this potentially be a solution that isn't introducing a virus into the body?
Okay, so I'll let Mark answer this question. Mark?
Yes. So this is absolutely not introducing a virus. We are introducing the treatment and the potential cure for the virus, but we are not utilizing the basic immune system of the patient to act against the virus. When a person is vaccinated, you introduce a foreign protein or a virus, and then the body's own immune system reacts to that virus. What we are introducing here, either in STI 1499 or in COVID trap, is a potential cure that binds specifically to the virus and is not only utilizes the immune system to clear out the virus, does not utilize the immune system to react to the virus.
Got it. So for those of those people that may be watching this right now or maybe listening to this in the podcast, if you are part of that school of thought where you don't want to, you maybe are apprehensive of taking a viral shot, this could be a potential solution to that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
This has been done in the pharmaceutical space. It's not like we come up with an innovative way to do it. This actually, there's abundant examples for a very big disease, very big product. One's the antibody Humira, targeting the disease target, which if we switch that to viral, it could be a viral target. And then you do a decoy protein, which is Amgen's product, which is an $8, $9 billion product as well. So very big product. They're using different approach to do it, and they're targeting the same diseases.
Got it. Okay. You know, it's interesting. You were also talking about how this virus mutates. And if you are looking, and I was talking to a bunch of scientists about this, and you know, as I was doing my pre-research for it, and all scientists across the board are saying that this is a very smart virus. It mutates very quickly. It looks almost like it could be something that, you know, could be used in a biogenetic warfare type situation. How are you, from a potential solution standpoint, able to, I guess, roll with the potential mutations of this virus so that it doesn't continue to mutate in the body?
So we have a two approach. One is using the decoy protein, because it's required by the virus to use this protein to enter into the cell. So no matter how the virus mutated, this receptor will not change, and they cannot mutate such that they cannot get into the cell. Then they cannot survive. So that decoy protein gonna avoid the mutation. Meanwhile, we have another approach with the antibody. So what we do is we're putting a antibody cocktail. So you have a two or three antibody. So one binds to particularly one region of the virus. The other binds to the other parts of the virus protein. So this way, when one part of the virus mutates, the other part is not mutated, the two kind of synergistically making that the virus can be defended, the virus. However, if you mutate one part, the other part is not mutated, and the other part of the antibody works, that's where the cocktail works. And the same concept they used before for HIV, which is you have an HIV cocktail. Mm-hmm. So we're applying the same science, same principles to the same, this particular COVID-19 pandemic.
When heart transplants back in the 80s started really becoming a thing, it wasn't, people started doing this more and more in organ transplants, there was always that fear that the body would reject a foreign body coming into the body. It would seem that introducing outside antibodies into a human body, there's that fear or potential risk of rejection. Is there any way to mitigate against that as you're introducing these antibodies?
So rejection is a normal function of the human body, to reject something that's foreign. First described with transplants of various organs or skin, it's the ability of the body to recognize self as opposed to non-self. Antibodies are recognized in general as self. So a body does not reject an antibody. And the way COVID-TRAP is designed is that it would be recognized as self, and so it wouldn't be rejected. And in transplants, what we do actually is we affect the immune system to prevent rejection, because if someone has a new heart, they want to get rid of that heart because it's not theirs. Right. It's recognized as non-self. So they would try and reject that. That's not what happens in a virus infection.
So it's almost like you have built-in immunosuppressants as you're introducing the antibody, if I'm understanding that correctly.
No, it's not an immunosuppressive. It's just the body doesn't recognize an antibody as non-self.
Got it.
It thinks that it's part of the normal body.
Got it. Okay. So, it's interesting. The last time we were in here, you were talking about how you all had gotten a very rapid FDA approval. You saw some great results with this COVID trap with the monkey. Where are you in the FDA approval at this point for human trials?
So what we are doing is we are preparing all of the documentation to submit to the FDA for both this drug and for 1499. And we are anticipating submitting all of that documentation by the end of next month.
And so what are we looking for? What are we looking at in terms of a timeline here? I know everyone is very much about speed to market with these drugs and the antidote. Is there any way that you could give us a definitive timeline?
So the timeline for both of these is roughly the same: to start the clinical trials by the end of July, beginning of August. And that would be the first trials in sick patients. And that should be a fairly quick trial. And we hope to expand that by the end of September, October timeframe. So, and then we should be able to finish the trials by the end of the year.
By the end of the year. Okay.
And then that's when we would apply for an approval.
Is there any sort of fear or worry that, usually when you're doing these trials, they take up to a year or two for these human trials and phases for you as scientists to go through all the different phases of the trial. Is there worry that there is a little bit of a glom onto this euphoria of, and I guess speed to say, hey, you know what, we're the first ones that have this antidote, so we're going to speed through these human trials. Is there that worry, or to put it in basic terms, is it safe that we're going so fast?
Certainly for an antibody that binds to something that is not in the normal body, it only binds to a virus, there should be absolutely no issues with that antibody. With COVID-TRAP, there are potential issues with angiotensin. We've designed the protein so it won't bind to natural occurring angiotensin.
Got it. Okay. I'm going to take some questions for the room because I see our chat is lighting up over here. So I think our first question is, we got a medical question. And it says, not really related to the stock, but has there's been wide criticism of antibody tests and even the nasal swab test accuracy. What's the difference between the science between vaccine development and antibody active virus test development? In short, why will a vaccine be effective when we seem to have trouble producing tests that are effective?
We actually, Sorrento is addressing these issues aggressively and proactively. We are developing assay that are going to be able to detect if you have antibody response to the vaccination. And meanwhile, and differentiate whether your antibody is simply binds to the virus or going to be actively neutralizing or remove the virus. So we are developing also a diagnostic potentially tell you if you have already have antibody produced that will neutralize the virus. So we're very active since the beginning of the year, and these diagnostic potentially can be used as a companion diagnostic to our antibody therapeutics and potentially for the vaccination either developed by us or by somebody else. So we're actively working on these, and we are very encouraged by the results we have so far.
We have a question about the company, a less medical question. But this one is from Michael. He says, do they think they will have to do a stock offering to get funding anytime soon, or will they get funding in other ways?
So there are some multiple ways to get funding to fund the operations we have. We don't typically comment on specific way, but to be assured, we have ways to fund the company. And we have, since inception, we have been in business for 11 years. We always have ways to fund the company.
You had mentioned, I think the last time you were in here, is there a potential $500 million grant coming from the government? How is that going, and have you gotten any word on that?
So what we said the last time is we apply for and to the government for potentially up to $500 million funding. So we're waiting for the government response, and we're moving forward with our program. Usually when they get into a clinical stage, that's when the government responds much more aggressively.
Right. I have to correct myself. It wasn't $500 million. It was $500 billion. To your point, Dr. G. Okay. I have a question. So in terms of, you're talking about timeline, if it does get approved, you know, we go through the phases, the human trials, everything seems ready to go by December. At what point does production kick in, and how much can you produce? How quickly can you mass produce this, and how quickly can you disseminate this to everyone? And what's the strategy at that point?
So our plan is to manufacture at risk. You know, while we're doing the trials, testing, all these, we're going to scale up and get our facility to produce the COVID-TRAP or the COVID-GAR antibody, both of them, and at risk. Just with the mindset, hopefully these testing going to be successful. We're going to be able to provide initial doses. And we're also in discussion to see if we can expand the scale up at the manufacturing tenfold or 20-fold.
Right. You have partnerships, right? Within the United States, if I'm not mistaken. you're working with a bunch of universities as well, right? Yeah. For potential distribution partnership, correct?
We actually are working with universities or institution for the testing part.
Okay.
When we do distribution of these as a separate, usually with a commercial entity, where right now is not in the distribution discussion. However, we are in discussion of scalable manufacturing.
Got it. We have one more question, and this is from Chad. He says, is there a concern that the coronavirus will mutate from year to year, making the vaccine less effective? I think in terms of mutation, does it look more like the flu virus, or is it something so complicated at this point that we haven't even seen anything like it?
So what I believe is the virus is going to mutate. It's already mutated many times. And we actually test our antibody against the different mutants, like a handful of mutants. Our antibody actually binds stronger to the mutant form of the virus. That means that looks like it's going to be more effective against the mutant forms with our antibody. And our COVID trap, which is a receptor for the virus, so no matter how they mutate it, our COVID trap should be able to bind to this mutated virus very effectively, unless they mutated, not using the same receptor to get into the human cell. By that time, the virus may not be infected.
All right. And then I have one more question for you both. Do they feel that once this technique of producing a vaccine for the virus, COVID-19, would be adaptable to other viruses in the future? So the vaccines are formulated faster in the future.
We have adapted our technology, and the FDA is working very hard right now because of the pandemic. In general, when viruses come around, it's not a pandemic and it's not as destructive a force as it has been for this particular virus. And they would prefer to see a more normal type procedure for approval, but they are working hard for this type of for this virus. And if another virus came though it had similar devastating effects, they would work just as hard and we would work just as hard.
I'm going to go back to the distribution question really quickly. It seems as though, you know, in addition to partnering or even exploring different distribution outlets, would partnering with a pharma company be on the table and or a potential acquisition? And I have to tell you, one of our members here asked a similar question, Susan. So acquisition target for potential distribution of this antidote?
Yeah, so we actually, the company is very unique. We have a vertically integrated. We actually have a small sales force, which is selling one of the FDA approved drug we have already on the market. However, the vision that we can be flexible, either go alone or working with a partner. And a lot of partners likes to have a turnkey system. So when you have a company like from discovery to manufacturing to potentially into a distribution channel, the pharma likes it. When they are talking to you, they say, well, if this company, we have some partnership or acquisition, this company has a turnkey. That means I don't need to do a whole lot of work. So not needed to be reestablished the channels, which we have built the company since day one through 11 years. We build the fully integrated with discovery and manufacturing, regulatory, clinical development, you know, all the machinery. And it's a turnkey system. So pretty attractive to the big pharmas.
Dr. G and Dr. Brunswick, it is always such a pleasure for you all to be in here with us. For the second time, please come back as you all have your developments along the way. As I know, it's moving very quickly, and we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Elite members, I will see you a little later this afternoon. And again, thank you to our guests. I'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Well, that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks for listening. I invite you to visit RagingBull.com/podcast. That's RagingBull.com/podcast to discover more episodes, to learn more about people who have created, built, and lived successful lives. Also, remember to subscribe to one of Raging Bull's newsletters Join me on the next episode as we share more stories from our guests on the wisdom behind wealth and how they built their own success. Raging Bull Podcast is brought to you by RagingBull.com, helping traders succeed through education, resources, and where you can watch real traders make trades. Raging Bull, learn to trade. We'll show you how.